You're listening to Radio Diaries. This is Joe, and I have some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Ear Hustle is back with a new season. Hosts Nigel Poor and Earlonne Woods are bringing you unique, surprising stories from four California prisons. This season, they have some truly interesting perspectives. You'll hear from people who are so comfortable in prison that they no longer want to be free. And you'll hear from mothers of inmates about the complicated reality of having adult children in prison. The show is full of candid interviews and thought-provoking conversations, and it just keeps getting better. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts and at earhustlesq.com. Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. We also have support from Indeed. Finding new hires shouldn't feel like a second job, and that's why Indeed only matches you with quality candidates that fit your job description. Indeed makes hiring more organized. You can screen, message, and schedule interviews with candidates all in one place. So try it out. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at indeed.com/diaries. Just go to indeed.com/diaries right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Radiotopia. From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman.
How do you feel about your work?
Do your arms get tired?
What do you do?
Tell me something.
I started working when I was about 12 years old.
Now describe it, step by step, as though you were telling a little child what it is.
In the early 1970s, author Studs Terkel went around the country with a reel-to-reel tape recorder, interviewing people about their jobs. He turned these interviews into a book called Working. And then something surprising happened. This 600-page oral history collection became a bestseller. It even inspired a Broadway musical. Something about ordinary people talking about their daily lives in their own words struck a nerve. It certainly did that for me. This is the sound of my copy of Working from high school. But it's one thing to read the interviews in the book. It's another thing to hear them. And for more than four decades, very few people had. After the book was released in 1974, the tapes were packed away in Studs' home office. A few years ago, we at Radio Diaries, along with our friend Jane Sachs of Project AND, were offered the chance to make a radio and podcast series out of the recordings. For me, as a proud archival tape geek, this is like finding the Dead Sea Scrolls. Today on the Radio Diaries podcast, we're bringing you some of our favorite stories from the Working tapes. Studs didn't just ask people what they did for a living. He asked them how they felt about it.
It was boring, monotonous work. I don't give a shit what anybody says. It was boring and monotonous to work on an assembly line.
That's Gary Briner. He was 29 when Studs interviewed him at a car factory in Ohio.
I'm somewhere between Youngstown and Warren, Ohio. It's an industrial area, steel, automobiles. Talking to Gary Briner. Gary Briner is the president of Local 1114, United Auto Workers. No, 1124.
1112.
1112. What sort of plant is this?
It's the General Motors Vega plant in Lordstown.
The most automated plant in the world, isn't it?
Right. It's the fastest line speed in the world. And they've got the most modern equipment, the Unimates. They got 22 in a row, 11 on each side of the line.
Can you describe a Unimate?
Well, it looks like a robot, you know, and it reminds me of a praying mantis. When they took the Unimates on, we were building 60 an hour prior to the Unimates. And when we came back to work with the Unimates, we were building 101 cars per hour. See, they never tire, they never sweat, they never complain, they never miss work. They're always there.
Yeah. So what happened to the guys in the plant that are working there now?
It's a funny thing, you know, when they revamped the plant, They tried to take every movement out of the guy's day so that he could conserve seconds and time, so that they could make him more efficient, more productive.
Is the assembly line approach dependent upon the fact that each guy is exactly like the other guy?
Right. GM's reason for trying to be more efficient is that if they could take 1 second and save a second on each guy's effort, they would, over a year, make $1 million.
1 second?
That's right. You know, they use the stopwatches. And they say, look, we know from experience that it takes so many seconds to walk from here to there. We know that it takes so many seconds to shoot that screw. We know the gun turns so fast and the screw so long and the hole so deep. We know how long it takes. And that's what that guy's going to do. And our argument has always been, you know, that's mechanical. Mm-hmm. That's not human. Look, we tire, we sweat, we have hangovers, we have upset stomachs, we have feelings, emotions, and we're not about to be placed in a category of a machine.
This is something new, isn't it? The workers in the plant, they feel that they have a right in determining the nature of their work, too, the working men?
We do now. We have some kind of pride being able to stand up to the giant General Motors Corporation and say, look, this is what I think is fair, and I'm willing to fight to show you that it's fair. I just think they want to be able to be treated with dignity and some respect, and you know, that's not asking a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
Well, it takes me back. I'm Gary Briner, retired, have been for 11 years. I didn't plan to be a union guy. I just wandered into it. In 1966 through 75, maybe later, the company and the union were bitter enemies. Every gain we made usually came out of a strike, and that's just the way it was. But the job of the union today is much tougher than it was for me in 1970 because the strength of the union has been so weakened. And look, the union's not perfect. I'd be the first to say it. But, you know, what we did in the union is to create this middle class that were able to do things, enjoy their life outside of work. And I worry about these things that we're losing. But listen, you got to have a job. No matter what it is, you got to have a job. It's one of those things that must be.
Picking it up with Gary, you feel this is shape of things to come?
I hope that it is, because I think what we're doing is right. You know, we're putting humans before profits, and I think that's necessary. I think if it isn't that way in other places, it should be.
Gary Briner, interviewed by Studs Terkel in the early 1970s. In some ways, listening to the working tapes is like stepping inside a time capsule. Many of the jobs Studs profiled no longer exist, like this one. A telephone switchboard operator in Waukegan, Illinois.
I'm talking to Sharon Griggins. You're about 17 going 18.
Mm-hmm.
And you work for Illinois Bell.
Oh, yes. Ma Bell. See, when you dial the operator, that's what you get. You get someone like me. When you dial O.
Oh, when they dial O, mm-hmm. We get you.
That's it. Because this is the only telephone office in Waukegan.
Could you describe it?
So, it's a big, long room, about half the size of a gymnasium, I would say, and it's down both sides. There's a whole row of switchboards.
How close is the girl sitting next to you?
Oh, very close. I would say she'd be sitting not even 5 or 6 inches away from me.
Is that cramped?
Yeah, we're cramped.
Yeah. So now describe it step by step, as though you were telling a little child what it is.
Okay, now first of all, in front of you, you've got about 7 pairs of cords and all these lights that tell you where the calls are coming from. When a light goes on, that means there's someone waiting there and you plug in and you ask them what they want.
Do your arms get tired?
No. Your mouth gets tired. It's the strangest. You get tired of talking.
You've
been talking for so long because you talk constantly for 6 hours and it's hard.
Keep going on this point.
Well, you get to feel just like a machine because essentially you're on this level of about 7 or 8 phrases that you use.
Like what?
You say, good morning, may I help you? Operator, may I help you? Oh, then it's, what number did you want? Or I have a collect call for you from so-and-so. Will you accept the charge? Something like that.
You said it's pretty hard.
It is, because what you're doing is like monotonous work. But for me, it's a great temptation to talk. Like when I'm bored, I make some little comments or something, or I talk with a Southern accent or Puerto Rican accent. You try and make your voice really sexy and just see what kind of reaction.
Well, you horse around.
Yeah, I do. But if you get caught talking with a customer, that's one mark against you.
Well, because the company says you can't get too personal.
Yeah, you can't. You know, some people, they'll say, operator, I'm lonesome. Will you talk to me?
People do say that? Yeah. Really?
They say, I'm lonesome. Will you talk to me?
What
and you couldn't. I says, gee, I'm sorry. I really can't. But you can't.
You're doing a great deal of talking, but the talk has nothing to do with actual human communication.
Right. That's very true. It's not really a lonely profession or anything, but it's one where you not a whole lot of communication, even though that is your job.
Sharon, you're quite marvelous. Really. Do you see yourself as a telephone operator for the rest of your life?
No. 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 Never. Never.
I did not become a career telephone operator. My name is Sharon Griggins. Back in 1972, I was the telephone operator in Studs Terkel's working. You know, I really remember working there very vividly. And I don't know, maybe that job helped me develop a keener ear for what people need and what people want. I think I became a really good listener. But let's get real. I don't think there's much romance in the work of a telephone operator. I think about some poor person at the end of that line who's sitting in a cubicle somewhere, saying the same things, taking down the same numbers for 8 hours a day. You know, automation is great in today's world, but it's hard to automate everybody's wishes and wants. I mean, we've all had those situations where all you want to do is talk to somebody, and all you have is a list of menu options. You know, I still tell my kids, just always pick zero.
Do you feel a machine could replace you one day soon?
Oh, sure.
Hmm?
Sure. It'd have to be some machine, though, because if people knew how funnily they talked, how badly they pronunciate, how hard it is to understand some people, a machine would have a hard time.
Telephone switchboard operator Sharon Griggins, interviewed by Studs Terkel. And if you pick up a copy of the book, Sharon appears under the pseudonym Heather Lamb. She's now the director of communications at the Seattle Public Library Foundation. We'll be back with more stories from the working tapes after this quick break. The Radio Diaries podcast has support from Robinhood, an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. And with Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners at Radio Diaries a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at diaries.robinhood.com. That's diaries.robinhood.com. Going through all those tapes from four decades ago, you can hear how different things were back then. Unions were strong. You talked to an actual operator to make a long-distance phone call. But the story that really struck me the most wasn't about how much has changed over the past four decades, but how much hasn't. This is the story of Renault Robinson, a Chicago police officer and one of the founders of the Afro-American Patrolmen's League.
I'm talking with Renault Robinson, and I'm thinking, Renault, why did you become a policeman?
Well, policeman is looked upon in the black community as an important thing. Even though people are afraid of them or people have bad thoughts about them, the position itself is still one of importance. I quit a job paying more money to become a police officer, and Sometimes I wonder if that was the best decision to make.
Could you describe your day, the day of a policeman in uniform?
Well, first of all, you're given an assignment and a partner. Most of the white guys are wondering what black they're going to get today. And the black guys are wondering the same thing. Which one of these fools am I going to get today? The black cop is saying the only reason I'm with this white cop is because they want to protect his life while he's riding around the black community to ward off the bullets. And so, you know, there's hard feelings on both sides.
Well, what happens then during these 8 hours? You're sitting with this white guy.
Say nothing to each other at all. Can you imagine that for 8 hours?
So there's no conversation?
Very little or none. Very little or none.
Got told Studs exactly what the situation was. My name is Renault Robinson, and when I first started on the police department, I went in there to do the best job I could as a policeman. But that became very difficult once I realized what the true circumstances were.
What led to your disenchantment?
I think it was just seeing blacks being treated one way and whites being treated another. You know, the majority of the policemen in my station were white. The opinions that they have of black people are that they're all criminals, they have no morals, no scruples, they're dirty and nasty, et cetera, et cetera.
So the trouble is with an ordinary citizen. Could you dwell on this?
Well, I would say about 60% of police-citizen contact start on a traffic situation. Certain units have really developed a science around stopping the automobile. In other words, in their minds, if they stop 100 cars in the black community, the likelihood of them finding one or two or three violations of some sort is highly possible. Now, of course, after you've stopped 1,000, you've got 900 people who are very pissed off. Teachers, lawyers, doctors, or just average working people who haven't broken any law and are very irritated and aggravated about being stopped by the police. And black folks or minority tolerance of that police brutality has grown very short.
Because they won't accept it.
They won't accept that treatment. They won't accept that dehumanizing, degrading treatment. That's why more young kids are being killed by the police than ever before.
50 years later, whether it's Chicago or Baltimore or Detroit, the same thing is happening in all of these cities. It just feels like deja vu. At the time I joined the Chicago Police Department, I was young, and I guess I was very energetic about doing something about racism. You know, I remember they forced us to put sawed-off shotguns, police-issued, in the squad cars, loaded with 00 buckshot. If you're a hunter, you know what that is. I and, you know, a handful of other black police officers just felt that that was wrong. You're chasing a kid or chasing a stolen car and you got something that could tear somebody's head off. So the Afro-American Patrolman's League, we raised hell, we picketed, we marched, we did everything to get the police department to take those guns out of the squad cars. Of course, speaking out on a regular basis made me a popular fellow in the police department. You go into your locker room and you see in your mailbox is human feces and cigarette ashes and trash. You kind of know what that means. You go in the bathroom and there's a picture of you on the wall dressed as a native with a bone in your nose. You know how they feel. They were all knicky-knack stuff just to try and force me out of the department.
I know the fact that you now have the reputation of speaking out, speaking your mind. Every now and then you're suspended.
I've got a 30-day suspension pending now.
What do they use as grounds?
Well, this latest one of being suspended because I was passing out literature in the police station to black police about the Patrolman's League. I was arrested in the station and I'm being suspended for conduct unbecoming a policeman.
In the end, I knew I had to go. I mean, I had fractured too many feelings and too many people who didn't want to hear what I had to say. And I left. I get a small pension now, and the beat goes on.
In 1973, 2 years after his interview with Studs Terkel, Renault Robinson and the Afro-American Patrolmen's League filed a landmark discrimination suit against the Chicago Police Department. The case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which ruled in favor of the Patrolmen's League. Renault Robinson retired from the force in 1983. He still lives in Chicago. One of the things that made me really excited about listening to the raw working tapes is that Studs Terkel is widely known as a great interviewer, and I wanted to hear his moves. I have to say, at first it was disappointing. In the tapes, he doesn't sound like a great interviewer. He doesn't ask any surprising, creative questions. A lot of the time he's just reacting to what people are saying. But it's that reacting that makes him so good. People who knew Studs say he had a huge ego. But in these interviews, you can feel how much he is focused on another human being. You can hear him listening, being totally in it. And of course, that is the simple, corny secret to interviewing, just giving someone your full, undivided attention. Our last story is about a New York press agent, legendary for quirky publicity stunts for his clients. Eddie Jaffe was a small, wiry man who loved to tell stories. And if you were to listen to the whole raw interview, Studs barely gets a word in.
So how many years have you been a press agent, roughly?
Well, you know, I started 32 years ago. And in the course of the years, I did everything. From strippers to a thing called roller derby, Hell on Wheels, from gangsters to Billy Graham.
Really? Gangsters to Billy Graham?
Yeah.
You handled both?
Yeah. But don't forget, Studs, that I spent most of my life learning techniques that are no value anymore.
What does that mean?
A client would come to me and say, I want to be a star, get me attention. And I'd get her in Life magazine. Today she can go on the Carson show, mm-hmm. if she can get on there, and get more attention than I could have gotten in a year. And this has helped destroy press agentry as we knew it.
Well, in these 30 years of being quite an imaginative press agent, you feel you've done meaningful work?
Well, there was a physical kick out of seeing things you're responsible for in the papers. But being a publicity man is a confession of weakness in a way. In other words, it's for people who don't have the guts to try to get attention for themselves. You spend your whole life telling the world how great somebody else is. And this is a frustrating thing.
Your imagination, you know, the ideas you had, do you feel it could have been used some other way?
Oh, sure. I mean, almost everybody, I think, looks back on their life and says, I wasted it. And being a press agent gives you a far greater opportunity to do this than almost any other occupation. You know,
I'll tell him if I'll be out by enough. Eddie, it's okay.
Eddie Jaffe, interviewed by Studs Terkel in the early 1970s. Jaffe died in 2003 at the age of 89. His obit in the New York Times referred to him as the last of a breed, the do-anything, buccaneering press agent. To hear more stories from the working tapes, go to our website, radiodiaries.org. You can hear Studs' interviews with a private eye, a hotel piano player, a jockey, and many more. A few of our favorite stories from the working tapes are also featured on the new Kickstarter podcast, Just the Beginning. Check it out on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Our series, The Working Tapes, was produced by me, Joe Richman, along with Jane Sachs, Nellie Gillis, and Sarah Kate Kramer. Our editors are Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. Special thanks to our producing partner, Jane Sachs, and her organization, Project AND. Also thanks to the Studs Terkel Radio Archive at WFMT and the Chicago History Museum. We couldn't have produced this series without support from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Hitachi Foundation. And of course, none of this would be possible at all without Studs' book. It's truly one of my favorite books in the world, and if you don't have a copy already, you should go get one. Radio Diaries is part of Radiotopia from PRX. To hear all the Radiotopia shows, go to radiotopia.fm. I'm Joe Richman. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia. From PR.